It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN, presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas of Champlain Valley Game Night here on this Thursday. It's the day we've been waiting for. Catamounts in action in the NCAA tournament. We are just an hour and a half away from tip-off. UVM and Purdue, the Cats, the 4th seed in the Midwest region, taking on the they're the 13th seed, taking on the 4th seeded Boilermakers, looking for the upset just like they did back in 05. Look, you want to come hang out with us. Let's get the housekeeping stuff out of the way. We are live at McGillicuddy's in Colchester right now, thanks to our friends at McGillicuddy's and Baker Distributing. It's nearly St. Patrick's Day, so we've got all kinds of Guinness stuff going on. We've got the Guinness girls here. We've got beer specials flowing. We got all kinds of great food. I already had my chicken wing allotment for the day. We're also giving away a round of golf at Basin Harbor with a cart. Believe it or not, despite the 30 inches of snow we got over the last 2 days, spring is coming. Golf season will eventually be here. We're giving that away. Come get qualified. Come hang out with us. The shows go until 7 o'clock. After 7 o'clock, we're staying around to watch UVM and Purdue. The Cats and the Boilermakers, come hang out. We're going to make this a great party. We want this to be your spot for the watch party for the Cats. Look, we're hoping for the Catamount upsets. I think they can do it. I think the Catamounts have a chance to win it. We're going to break down the game. You want to see it with all your friends who are rooting for UVM too? Bring your green and gold out. Come hang out with us. If you're looking for other NCAA tournament games, they're on 960 The Zone. Go over to our sister station, 960 The Zone. That's where we've got nonstop, all day, continuous coverage of college basketball and March Madness. 960 The Zone for that. And tomorrow, again, we're live at McGillicuddy's in Williston celebrating St. Paddy's Day, and we can't wait for that. So there's the housekeeping stuff. Now we move on. Again, let's update people on the early part of the NCAA tournament. If you've missed any of it or you're just joining us, you've been in work, you haven't been able to watch. Right now, 12th-seeded Middle Tennessee State leading 5th-seeded Minnesota 69-61. There's 3 minutes, 40 seconds to play in that one. That would be the first big upset here seed-wise in the NCAA tournament. Middle Tennessee State last year is a 15 upset Michigan State. They shocked the world in that first round game. Could they do it again here? Although, would it really be an upset? Because Vegas actually had this game pretty much as a pick'em. 8th seeded Northwestern making their first ever appearance in the NCAA tournament. They lead Vanderbilt right now, the 9 seed, 49-43. Those 8-9 matchups, when you pick your bracket and for your office pool, always difficult because you just don't know. 8-9, can one of them beat the 1? So a lot of people, if they say a 1's going down to the second round, well, you got to get this matchup first. Again, Princeton nearly pulled the upset over Notre Dame. They weren't able to get that done, losing by 2. It's been a full day here. Thank you to everyone who joined our bracket challenge at ESPN.com. Again, a lot of people called in, asked us how to join it, Facebooked us in, tweeted us in. They wanted the exact details on how to join, and when all was said and done, 350 people joined our ESPN Bracket Challenge for 101.3 ESPN. We're playing for $101, bragging rights, supremacy here in the Champlain Valley, in the Burlington area, in the Plattsburgh area, looking for a winner of $101. That's going to be great. I've already got a loss. I already had Winthrop going over Butler. That didn't happen in another 13-4 matchup. My final four, so all of you can know it and hold me to it, Villanova, Gonzaga, Kansas, and UCLA. So I've got 3 of 4 number ones in it, but I do have the 3-seed UCLA winning the national championship over Gonzaga. And just think about that would mean. If UCLA is able to win the national title, one, you would have the continued resurrection of arguably the most decorated program, or of the most decorated program, but arguably the most storied program in NCAA history. You'd have Lonzo Ball maybe elevating himself, potentially to the number one pick in the NBA draft, because to win a national title, you would need Lonzo Ball to play well. And then you'd have to deal with LeVar Ball, Lonzo's father, talking even more than he already does. So UCLA, that is my winner over Gonzaga. But again, the game we care about is just an hour and 20 minutes away. UVM and Purdue, the Cats taking on the Boilermakers. And look, if you're going to beat if you're going to beat someone, you better know your opponent, right? Study your opponent, and that's what we did today. Earlier this afternoon, I had a chance to talk with Brian Newbert. Brian Newbert is a Purdue insider, covers the Boilermakers all season long for goldandblack.com. Goldandblack.com is really your number one stop for anything Purdue related. I talked to Brian Newbert, and the first thing I asked him was, I told him, I flat out said, Brian, tell us about the team we're going to upset today. Brian's answer.
Obviously, Purdue had a pretty good season, won the Big Ten by two full games. They were down two games at the end of January to Wisconsin. Wisconsin kind of fell apart there down the stretch. Purdue got hot, won 8-9, I think it was, and just a uncommonly balanced team offensively. You know, they have two very good big men, obviously Caleb Swanigan and Isaac Haas, who's a 7'2", probably 300 pounds, and a better basketball player than you would expect somebody of those proportions to be. Caleb Swanigan's probably college basketball's best rebounder. He might not necessarily lead the nation in rebounds, but I don't know who's better. And he's a very uncommonly skilled, I know I've used that word a couple times now, but he's a very uncommonly skilled big man. He can shoot from the perimeter. He's very good with his back to the basket. He's a very good passer. But on top of those two guys, Purdue has one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country. A few years ago, they weren't the most skilled offensive team in college basketball, and Matt Painter decided he was going to go recruit a shooter in every class. And kind of the fruits of that right now is a team where they're going to have four guys on the floor most of the time who can really shoot the ball from the perimeter. I think they're pretty close to being a 40% team collectively, but also they have a knack for kind of getting hot and changing games with their shooting. There have been a number of games this season where they've been down double digits on the road or down 8-9 points, whatever it is, and they've made 3 or 4 threes in a row, maybe 4 or 6, something like that, and completely changed games. They've shot the ball very well on neutral floors, for whatever that's worth, this season. So what kind of stands out is they're just a very, very unique offensive team because they've got a really strong presence on the interior and really, really skilled guys on the perimeter. So that's kind of what stands out most. Defense is sort of a mixed bag. They're very good when they're not turning the ball, or they can be very good when they're not turning the ball over, when they're not giving up offensive rebounds. But those have been two of the sore spots for Purdue all season long.
UVM is 29-5. They win their conference tournament. They've got the nation's longest win streak. I'm sure they're certainly not going to sneak up on Purdue. What is the coaching staff of the Boilermakers saying about this matchup?
I would imagine that I don't think anybody's going to take a 21-game winning streak lightly. You know, Purdue lost Arkansas Little Rock last season in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So there is a history there where that should underscore to Purdue that you can't take anybody lightly. I don't think anybody would take Purdue lightly anyway. You know, Purdue played Vermont and Mac Arena last year, won relatively easily. But that was a game where they just made all their shots. It's not like they can look at that game and say, that's going to happen again, so we're going to win 107-79 again. I would imagine that, you know, the 21-game winning streak is going to be a crux of Purdue's message to its players more than anything, because that obviously commands respect.
If UVM is able to pull an upset, what will be the thing that they have to do? What will be the thing they can exploit in Purdue?
Yeah, to be honest with you, it's probably more about what Purdue does or doesn't do. You know, Purdue's been a victim. When it struggled this year, it's been more a victim of self-inflicted wounds. When they turn the ball over, opponents can get in transition. Opponents can attack a defense that's scrambling, whatever it may be. That's where Purdue really struggles. Lately, Purdue's not been rebounding very well, which is counterintuitive considering they've got such great size around the basket, but they've been giving up a lot of second chances, like scoring off all of them. Opponents' success rate on their second chances has been astronomical, including the Michigan game in the Big Ten tournament, where Michigan, who's I think the worst offensive rebounding team in the Big Ten, ended up with 18 second chance points, and that changed the game right there. So it's going to be a matter of Purdue running down long rebounds, Purdue not giving up offensive rebounds at the rim, and Purdue not turning the ball over. Vermont, if they're making threes, if their big kid can make threes, that's always a problem for Purdue because the size Purdue has isn't necessarily comfortable guarding away from the basket. And anytime they face a team with a big guy who can step out and shoot, then that can be a real problem for Purdue too. So there are some matchup considerations there as well. But the bottom line for Purdue is Purdue just has to not turn the ball over and not give up second chances more than anything. If Vermont can make plays off the dribble too, if Vermont can get out in transition, those are areas where Purdue can be vulnerable as well.
Brian Newbert, he covers Purdue basketball. Tournament action between the Catamounts and the Boilermakers just hours away. You can listen to it, of course, here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Look, this is a unique situation here for UVM because they've got a couple Indiana kids on this team, Andre Wills, the Duncans, Josh Spidell. What are the relationships like between any of the Purdue players and those Catamounts with Indiana connections?
Well, I know that one of Purdue's players, Ryan Klein, was an AAU teammate of Josh Spiedel. They were very close. They are very close. And I know what happened to Josh affected him pretty significantly. That was a pretty awful deal, obviously. What happened to Josh Spiedel? I know that was something that really personally affected Ryan Klein. Outside of that, I'm not sure how close any of these guys are. I can't think of any. Nowadays, the relationships are so often between kids who play together in the summer, and the only connection I know of in terms of summer basketball would be Ryan Klein and Josh Spiedel. I don't think there were any other AAU teammates between these two teams. So the Ryan Klein Josh Spiedel connection is a pretty big one, because those two are pretty tight, and I know they've been talking this week, and looking forward to seeing one another.
Brian, we'll get you out of here on this. Purdue, the major advantage that they would have in this game is what? Is it just the pure size and the ability of Caleb Swanigan?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When you just look at this game on paper and you see Caleb Swanigan and Isaac Haas against a roster that doesn't have a player taller than 6'8", that's something that just jumps off the page at you. Now, Purdue has to be clean in its post-entries. I'd imagine Vermont's going to probably try to do something outside the box, try to keep the ball out of the post. Last year, Little Rock did a good job crowding the post and keeping the ball away from the size Purdue had. And then Purdue had a player named A.J. Hammonds, too, who's now with the Dallas Mavericks, who was one of the best centers in college basketball. They just couldn't get the ball into him the way they wanted to. But this is probably the best offensive team top to bottom Purdue's brought into an NCAA tournament in a long time. So if Purdue's not able to get the ball inside, as I said before, they've got all these shooters. So when you really sell out to keep the ball out of the post, you're really kind of playing with fire. This is a team that has been pretty consistent too with its shooting too. It's not just that it's a 40% shooting team. There haven't been a whole lot of bottom out games where they've just gone completely cold. That would be obviously the hope for anyone it plays from here on out, if they're going to try to completely sell out to keep the ball out of the post. But clearly the biggest matchup disparity here would seem to be the size around the basket.
Brian Newbert covers Purdue. If we are ready for the matchup, just hours away here. You can listen to it. Coverage starts at 7 o'clock. Brian, no one else in Burlington is going to tell you this, but I will wish you good luck. Enjoy the game, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Appreciate that as well. There he goes. That was Brian Newbert. I spoke to him earlier today. Covers the Boilermakers for goldandblack.com, which is really your one-stop shop for anything you want to know about Purdue basketball, Purdue football. Look, excited for the game. My biggest takeaways from that interview, what he said, Purdue's big men, for all the size they have, their big men do not like to guard away from the hoop. That is why if you're watching UVM play today, be looking for Anthony Lamb, be looking for Peyton Henson and their ability to hit jumpers early. If those guys can hit threes, take Purdue's big men out of the lane, then, A, that gets Vermont points on the board just by scoring, but it stretches out the defense, brings the big guys out a little further because they have to respect the jump shot, and then that opens up the lane for some penetration, and penetration is going to be key. If Trabell Haynes can get inside the lane, if he can get in the lane and kick out to the spot-up jump shooters that Vermont has, a Kurt Steidel, an Ernie Duncan, Lamb, Henson, whoever it is. Vermont's got a lot of shooters, but they've got to be able to get inside the lane, draw a double team, draw help, draw weak side help, and then kick out to open shooters. Vermont has to shoot well from the outside. That is how you create open shots. Look, I picked Purdue. I'm on record in saying that I got Purdue winning by 6, but I think this game is very, very close, and I would not at all be shocked if UVM won it. And to be honest with you, I'm on record as saying Purdue's going to win by 6, but the more I talk, the more I'm talking myself into UVM being right down to the wire. You want to come hang out with us. Look, we're watching this game tonight. McGillicuddy's in Colchester. This show goes till 7. And then the pregame show. Listen to the pregame show with Sam Hyman on our station. Drive over. Hang out with us. Rich Arney, we're all going to be here. It's Guinness night because St. Patrick's Day is tomorrow. I just got a Guinness shirt from the Guinness girls. They got shots here of who even knows what coming out. We got Guinness specials. We got great food. You got Rich. You got Arney. This is the spot that you want to be. We're hanging out. UVM and Purdue. Tip off now, just an hour and 10 minutes away. Look, still a jam-packed full show coming for you. When we come back, we go through batting practice, the best sound bites in sports, who's saying what, what's going on, and what's happening with Rory McIlroy, what is he saying as well. All that next, Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
Coming up tomorrow on Mike and Mike in the Morning, they're breaking down the NCAA tournament all day long. Dan Dockich joins the show at 7 a.m., Jay Williams at 8, and Seth Greenberg's on at 9. What happened in
host Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas again. Champlain Valley Game Night here on this Thursday. We're leading up to the UVM game. Cats at Purdue. Tip off now just 1 hour, 5 minutes away. We've got your watch party right here. We're at McGillicuddy's in Colchester. Come hang out with us. The shows have been here all day. Rich and Arnie were here. I'm here till 7. Then we got the game. This place is packed, but trust me, there's still plenty of tables here. Come grab some great food. We got Guinness specials. The Guinness girls are here. They're passing out T-shirts. They've got shots. I just got a T-shirt. I don't get anything for free anywhere, so come join us here. It's the day before St. Paddy's Day. It's UVM. Wear the green for St. Paddy's Day. Wear the green for UVM. Whatever your reason is, just come here and hang out with us as well. Still a full show. Irv Bryson, Vermont Bucks head coach, is going to join us in about 15 minutes. They start their first season. Their inaugural season kicks off tomorrow. They're playing Connecticut. NCAA tournament action right now. Middle Tennessee State pulls the upset. They knock off fifth-seeded Minnesota. It's an upset in terms of seeding, but Vegas actually had it pretty much as a pick 'em game. I got that one right. So I'm sure a lot of people, though, not too many perfect brackets out there right now. Northwestern leads Vanderbilt right now by 4. We'll keep you posted on that. 3:15 to play in that game. That's an 8-9 matchup. But hey, we do it every day. The best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what? What's going on? You know it. It's time for batting practice.
Champlain Valley Game Night batting practice.
Batting practice again. The best sound bites in sports. Willie's back in the studio running the board. Willie, let's go with this one first. Todd McShay was on Mike and Mike yesterday. We didn't get to it yesterday. I wanted to get to it today. Todd McShay on Mike and Mike yesterday talking about where Oklahoma running back Joe Mixon will get drafted.
In addition to dealing with the individual and concern about his ability to stay out of trouble off the field, also the PR nightmare. Let's face it, this is not a good look when you're going to bring in a player who has a video of what he did. So I think ultimately, to answer your question, he'll probably come off the board in the third round, somewhere in that area. I think he's too talented, right or wrong, for him to fall to the third day of the draft. But I do think there's probably only 5-7 teams in the league that realistically, honestly, will have this guy on the board. But at that point in the third round, I think you start to look around at all the other talent and say, man.
Joe Mixon from Oklahoma, you know it by now, right? You know the backstory. Punched out a fellow student at the University of Oklahoma, a female, got in legal trouble for that, perception trouble here with people around the nation. It's a bad look for the league because the league is fighting this domestic violence issue and trying to show that they're not that they're against domestic violence, and they're against their league being part of domestic, having domestic violence connections as well. Joe Mixon will get drafted. Joe Mixon will slide further than his talent level dictates. I mean, he is a first round level talent. Most places have him as a as the fourth best back in the draft. Someone will draft him, and if a team's going to draft him, it's got to be a team that is, A, going to hold him accountable. They'll send him to sensitivity training. They'll send him to classes. They'll make sure that he's in the community being part of the solution to this. They won't allow him to run. It's got to be a team that has a culture that could accept this. It's got to be a team that's got an infrastructure built. It's got to be a well-run team. And I'm not saying that I want my favorite team or your favorite team to sign Joe Mixon, but if Joe Mixon is going to succeed in the NFL and succeed as a human being, it's got to be a team with a history of being good guys. The Patriots have a culture where they can change guys who have had issues. The Steelers, the Seahawks, you can't have this guy go someplace where everything is just a free-for-all. That would not be a good look. He's going to be in the league whether you like it or not. Now you just got to hope he's going to go to a team that is going to hold him accountable for his actions in the past and help him be a positive contributor to society in the future. We move on here in batting practice. Let's stick with the NFL draft. Let's stick with running backs in the NFL draft. Mel Kiper Jr. on Mike and Mike today talking about where Stanford back Christian McCaffrey may go.
Plug and play, great versatility, tremendous kid, great bloodlines. I mean, he can catch the ball out of backfield, he can run, he can return punts, kickoffs, great attitude, great approach. I think in the middle of the first round is where you'll see him come off the board. I thought that all along. Maybe he would drop down to Kansas City, Green Bay. I thought that early when I started doing Mach 1, Mach 2. Now you're thinking mid-first round. I think he's a second running back off the board behind Leonard Fournette. With Dalvin Cook dropping just a bit, had some injury issues at Florida State. You talk about consistency throughout the process. I think you look at McCaffrey right now as a guy that is moving up to the point where, as I said, he could be the second running back off the board.
Look, I love Christian McCaffrey. I loved him when everyone loved him. I loved him 2 years ago at Stanford when he was in the mix for the Heisman Trophy. I loved him last year despite the fact that he had injuries and the team wasn't as successful. You know, the Cardinal program wasn't as successful as it had been the year prior when they won the Rose Bowl by beating Iowa, and McCaffrey was the star of that game. I love McCaffrey's versatility. He is a guy, people have said, he could be a wide receiver who just, he could be a wide receiver. His hands are that good. His quickness is that good. He can run between the tackles, but he can also give you that electrifying playmaking ability, maybe on special teams, as a punt returner, as a kick returner. Maybe he's a guy who can catch, you know, seven balls a game out of the backfield and also run it 14 times between the tackles. There's just so much. He's the Swiss Army knife of running backs. Leonard Fournette is a one-dimensional player, and he's really good at that one dimension of just bowling you over. But Christian McCaffrey can do it all. And to hear him slide up into the mid-first round, that's bad for teams that, you know, I thought he could give great value to the New York Giants. I thought he could be a guy who they could slot in. You've got three great wide receivers in Marshall, Shepard, and Odell Beckham Jr. You put him as a guy who can catch passes out of the backfield or maybe be a second slot receiver in four wide receiver sets. How dangerous would that be? And, oh, by the way, they need a running back because they got rid of Rashad Jennings. I would have loved to see McCaffrey fall to the Giants, but it looks like he's going to go too high up in the draft for the Giants to get him. If you're looking for him in that 10 to 15 round, that would be a real improvement because, as Mel Kiper said, draft prognosticators saw him a little lower than that. We were even hearing rumors about him to the Patriots at number 32 when the Pats had that first-round pick. Moving on here again, we are live at McGillicuddy's getting ready for UVM and Purdue NCAA tournament action. All our friends are here. The Guinness drafts are everywhere. The shots are out. I'm, like, waiting to get off the air so I can join in the fun as well. Come hang out with us here for the game. This place, there's still tables for food, but you definitely want to try to get in here quick because this place is going to fill up. It is batting practice. UVM has had such a good season, and they've become really a beacon for mid-majors because to show that they can go unbeaten and get a 13 seed, you kind of wonder, okay, what's next? Where can UVM go from here? Well, at the high end of where UVM wants to get to is what Butler is what Gonzaga is. You want to take yourself from mid-major Cinderella story to real, really, really established program that can compete on a national level. That's where UVM would hope to be. Well, Mark Few, head coach at Gonzaga, was on with Mike and Mike today as well. Mark Few, the head coach of Gonzaga, talking about how he built his program from what they were 20 years ago to what they are now.
We've been in a, you know, just an incredible growth mode since that first day, and, you know, we made it in 99, and the school has been incredibly on board with that. As I said, the city of Spokane's been phenomenal and a great launching pad for that.
If you're talking about how UVM can take the next level, if you're buying stock in the Catamounts, this is the time to buy it. You go 29-5. You win your conference. You go unbeaten in your conference. You do something no one in the conference has ever done, and that's set history. That's make history and be the first team ever to go unbeaten in your conference season. Then you win off and you sweep the league tournament. You've got the player of the year, the coach of the year, the sixth man of the year, the rookie of the year. You've got everything on this team. You've got young pieces coming back so you can build on it even further for next year. And, oh, by the way, within the next 5 years, you've probably got a new arena coming. This is the time to take Vermont to the next level. Maybe it can't get to the level that Gonzaga is. Maybe it's not possible to get it to the level that Butler is. But it is possible to put Vermont in a position consistently every single year to be playing for NCAA tournaments. I was there at Albany, and I know that people don't like when I talk about Albany, but I was there, and I saw them get to three consecutive NCAA tournaments. And it comes from program funding and paying your head coach so he sticks around and, you know, increasing your recruiting budget and getting more exposure and building up your other teams because that raises the university profile. All of that helps. This is the time to buy stock in UVM athletics and in UVM basketball. Now you just need to make sure that everything that I just mentioned follows, and I think it will. I mean, there's no inclination that this is a one-hit wonder for UVM. That new arena, if it gets done, when it gets done, is going to be a game changer. Again, Champlain Valley Game Night. Let's stick in college basketball. Breaking news today that Indiana fired head coach Tom Crean, and kind of cowardly to fire him the first day of the NCAA tournament, basically to hide that story in the news cycle. Well, Jeff Goodman was on SportsCenter today. He helped break that story. He gave his initial reaction, Jeff Goodman, on the Indiana job search now and job opening.
I just passed Mike Davis in the hallway. I'm here in Greenville, and he's with Texas Southern now. And remember, he was a coach at Indiana after Bob Knight. He was Bob Knight assistant from 2000-2006, and I asked him that. And he said, listen, you have to win every year. And Tom Crean didn't do that. He had a mulligan early because he took over from the Kelvin Sampson mess, all the academic stuff, all the NCAA stuff. So he had a mulligan for the first few years. But over the last four, listen, if you're at Indiana, you should be going to the tournament every single season.
Jeff Goodman on SportsCenter today talking about the new opening at Indiana. Willie, I know you're back in the studio. Hey, give me the music again, because I got a couple more clips I want to get to here. Give me the batting practice music again, Willie.
Champlain Valley Game Night batting practice.
That's right. We run it back here. We're at McGillicuddy's Live. So that was Jeff Goodman talking about Indiana. The reason why we bring that up is because there was some speculation that maybe Celtics coach Brad Stevens would want that job at Indiana. He had success at Butler in the state of Indiana. He's from Indianapolis. Would he go back and take one of the top five jobs in college basketball? When you talk about the best jobs in college basketball, what are you talking about? UCLA, Kentucky, Indiana. Put them in whatever order you want, but I think Duke, North Carolina, I think those are your top five. Put them in any order that you want, but it's without a doubt one of the most coveted jobs in college basketball. Brad Stevens, though, is not leaving. He's not leaving the NBA. He's been in college. 13 years he was in college. Been to Final Fours. He dealt with, you know, boosters. He dealt with recruits and parents. He had to deal with all that stuff. That's all stuff that you are free of when you are coaching in the NBA. You got a chance to win. LeBron is in the back nine of his career as the most dominant player in the league. The Celtics are only going to improve here as we move forward. I like a lot of what the Celtics are doing. I like a lot of what Brad Stevens has to work with, and I like his chances to stay in the NBA. Again, batting practice here on this Thursday, getting ready for the UVM game. How about this one? Terrell Owens, T.O., really, really wants to be in the Hall of Fame. And if he wants to be in the Hall of Fame, I'm here to give him some advice. Stop talking. Terrell Owens today was talking about his candidacy. Give me the T.O. cut, Willie.
They've moved the finish line every time that I come up. Too many passes dropped, too many teams. What sense does that make?
My numbers speak for themselves. I've earned it. And then you have guys like Chris Carter that comes on here and call me a flawed candidate. Here's a guy that's supposed to be a Christian guy, a character guy that has snorted cocaine, alcohol.
He had his problems. He has corrected all those problems.
But I'm a flawed candidate?
T.O. needs to stop talking. The worst thing, you know, some of the best thing that you can do when you're playing is to self-promote yourself. It helps build a brand. It helps get endorsements. A lot of guys don't like it, but if you're as good as T.O., then you can get away with that, and it helped him, and it helped raise the profile of the league. Now when you're done, stop talking. You are a Hall of Famer. Your day will come. What you say about Chris Carter, it has some validity. It has some weight to it. Chris Carter wasn't a great guy at times, you know, at the early part of his career. But you know what? There is no good guy clause in the NFL to get into the Hall of Fame. There is no good guy clause to get into the Hall of Fame. Just shut up and just let the process play out. Willie, we'll go with the last cut here in batting practice, and then one thing I want to get to quick. Give me the Ryan Clark cut. Ryan Clark on Mike and Mike today talking about Darrell Revis, who is a free agent, is eligible to be signed. He's free of legal charges now because the charges were dropped on him from that incident in Pittsburgh. His play deteriorated last year. Should a team sign Darrell Revis, use Darrell Revis? Ryan Clark on that.
I think if you bring him in, you have to bring him in at corner initially. You also have to ask him to do things he can do. It's not, you know, and people made the jokes about Revis Island. It's not that anymore. I think if he can play into a system, if he can play into concepts, he can be a good player. But I believe he can also play safety. He can communicate. He's smart. And his movement skills now and his athleticism now would probably lend more to playing the middle of the field, dropping in the box, than it would being zoned man-to-man in the corner.
That was Ryan Clark on Mike and Mike today. If I'm a team, I want Revis. If I'm a team who has the ability and the luxury to use Revis as a third, fourth defensive back, then I absolutely want him. If I'm Seattle, if I'm New England, if I'm a guy, if he can be my third, fourth option and not my 1-2 when he doesn't need to be Revis Island, and I've got some depth at the defensive back position, I absolutely want Darrell Revis on my team. But I don't want to pay him $8 million to be my number one because he's not that guy anymore. But if you put him in the slot, let him play half the snaps, I think he can be a good value get for guys. Is he willing to do that? I don't know. But if he's willing to do that and I've got the ability to do that, there's a place for him. You even saw last year how much depth is needed because of all the three wide receiver sets and because of all the spread defense or spread offense that there is. You need more and more secondary pieces. And when they start to fall off and the lack of depth shows, you're going to wish you had a guy like Darrell Revis. I mean, what happened to the Seahawks against Atlanta last year? Deshaun Shedd gets hurt. Seahawks get blitzed in that game. Then Green Bay is playing with like their 8th, 9th, and 10th defensive backs against Atlanta in the NFC Championship game. Darrell Revis has a place in this league. It is a long season, and you need I think Darrell Revis absolutely has a place in the league, just in the right system. That was it for batting practice here on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Irv Bryson, Vermont head coach, Vermont Bucks head coach, joins us in about 5 minutes. I just want to get to this real quick. Rory McIlroy, obviously one of the best golfers right now on the PGA Tour, is upset. He made some comments that some golf clubs, you know, still have an antiquated, outdated policy of not allowing women. And Muirfield in Scotland is one that has just changed its rule to allow women members for the first time. And that's really because they want to host the British Open. So the British Open probably told them you can't host this event if you don't allow women. So they did. And Rory McIlroy spoke against it, saying, in this day and age where you've got women that are leaders of certain industries and women that are heads of state and not to be able to join a golf course, I mean, he's also said it's obscene. It's ridiculous. I'm glad they saw some sort of sense. Here's this, and I want to make sure I phrase this right. I am with Rory McIlroy that it is antiquated and outdated that you have women's or women that are excluded from these golf clubs or from country clubs or from anything. Yes, that is a discriminatory practice. But do not make it like it is only, you know, only the rich white men that have a, you know, have policies like that. Because if you're going to make outrage about that, I'm with you. But I don't hear that same outrage about all girls' schools. I don't hear that same outrage about historically black colleges and universities. I mean, so there are places that are, I don't even want to call them discriminatory, but they're limited in their membership. It's not just golf clubs. It's not just this that's restrictive. They're all boys' schools. They're all girls' schools. There are historically black colleges. There are things out there that, on one hand, they provide you opportunities, but the opponents of that will say they're discriminatory. I'm with Rory McIlroy. It's time for this policy to change, but don't look at it and have tunnel vision, because this is not the only place where those kind of practices or membership is excluded. It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. The Vermont Bucks open up their inaugural season tomorrow. They're taking on Connecticut Gutterson Fieldhouse. 7:05 is the kickoff. What are you going to see when you go to Bucks games this year? We're going to talk to the man on the sidelines, Irv Bryson. He's the head coach of the Bucks. He joins us next. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
Coming up tomorrow on Mike and Mike in the Morning, they're breaking
here. Hashtag one new GNC.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN, presented by the Windjammer Restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
Welcome back, Champlain Valley Game Night on this Thursday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Look, we're all counting down here to the UVM and Purdue game in the first round of the NCAA tournament. But locally, there's some other things going on as well you need to be paying attention to. Tomorrow's St. Patrick's Day. It's also the opener for the Vermont Bucks, the inaugural season. And we go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line, and we have on the phone head coach of the Vermont Bucks. It is Irv Bryson. Coach, you ready to finally play all this time talk and all this time promoting? You ready to finally get out there and play?
Yeah, definitely so, man. After one whole year of preparing for this first game, man, it just seems like a long time coming, man, and time is here. I'm ready to play some football now.
Talk about what the last year has been like. I mean, from the day you got the job until now, what exactly has gone into it?
I mean, it's been so much. It's been all about the community. We've been trying to do a lot of community building, you know, and get the interest of the community into the team so they can buy into the concept. And it's been so important that we get them involved with the team so that when we bring these guys in here, they would like the product that we're putting out on the field. I mean, that journey for almost a year of trying to build a team up in the community, now we have a football team. Now we're ready to play some football. It's been real tough, man, but I'm looking forward to seeing everybody in the arena tomorrow night and finally, you know, getting this product on the field and seeing all the fans in the stands.
You know, what is your motivation? What is the motivation of your players to get involved with this? Look, I know what people are going to say, that there's a handful of people, a group of people, a strong group of people that are really, really excited. And the other group of people says, it's not the NFL, it's not Division I college ball, so then why should we care? But you know what? What is the motivation for you guys to come out and play? Because it is still professional football.
It's about, for these young men, you got to realize, these guys, their ultimate goal is someday to play in the NFL. And they at one time were looked at by NFL football teams, and NFL told them that they needed more film. And this is an opportunity for them to get that film and get that opportunity to move back to the next level. And when you look at a guy like John Lattimore, who was on the radar for the Atlanta Falcons, you know, and who was about to go in the camp with them and tore his Achilles tendon. So by him getting hurt, caused him not to go into camp, and now he's here showing the Atlanta Falcons that he is healthy, he can get the job done. So, man, this is something very special and dear to these young men who are going to get the opportunity now to be back playing professional football and to get the opportunity to move back to the next level. So that means a lot to these guys, man. And I'm hoping that they come out and see the passion and the love that these guys bring in to the ball game. And not only that, they're going to be disciplined here in the state of Vermont, but in the city of Burlington.
What's the style of play like in the league, the Canadian American Indoor Football League? What's the style of play like? Are we going to be throwing it 70 times? Are we going to be running ground and pound? What kind of style of play are we going to see in this league?
Well, normally it's about 95% pass, 5% run. But what I like to try to do, about a 60-40 pass-run. You know, this game is all about passing. It's a fast-paced game. And that's why you now have so many football players in the NFL who originally started from Kurt Warner to get into the NFL because the pace of the game, the pace is very fast. So when you try to play in the NFL, you got to be able to move very fast. In arena football, this game is so fast that you have to stay on your toes because you don't never know what may happen because you can somehow or another score 40 points in 1 minute and a half, you know? So that's a lot of points that's getting put up on the board. But I like to do a balanced attack. I like to be able to throw the ball and run the ball as well because if you can't run the football, it's going to sit back, you know, and try to pick you off every down.
Is it difficult sometimes to train the players to play in an arena-style game? Because there's all kinds of different formations. There's different, you know, rules as far as players going in motion, all that kind of stuff. For these guys that have played traditional high school, college, professional football in other places, is it difficult to try to teach them on the nuances of the indoor game?
You know, for some ball players it is, but some ball players it's not. That's when it comes down to the responsibility of the head coach and to make sure that you bring in the right ball players to fit your system, that you know that they are willing and able to adjust. And that is a major problem with a lot of ball players that try to go to the NFL. They can't make that adjustment, and they can't adjust to whatever scheme that coach is running. So that's why a lot of guys can't make it on that level. So what I did when I started recruiting and building the team, I brought in ball players that are very smart, very intelligent, and able to adapt and adjust to anything. And that's why I believe that we're in a good situation and we're a lot farther along than we should be.
Irv Bryson, he's the head coach of the Vermont Bucks. They open up play tomorrow against Connecticut at home, Gutterson Fieldhouse. 7:05 is kickoff, and he's here with us on Champlain Valley Game Night. So, Coach, you talk about guys trying to get film to try to show NFL scouts, NFL team representatives. If a guy comes out tomorrow and plays really, really well, is there a chance that he's plucked away from your roster? How quick can some of this turnover come?
Yeah, there's a possibility. You know, things go well for some of these guys because we do have a five-game plan for every last ball player that's on our team. And if they do get moved up, which we want them to move up, because that means it gives an opportunity for another kid to come along and get an opportunity as well. But that lets other young men know that they're aspiring to get to the NFL. Vermont Bucks is the place to go because of the fact that they will try to help you get to the next level, not try to keep you on a lower level.
Irv, hey, we appreciate the time. We want you guys to have great success. Who would have thought that we'd be playing basketball and hockey so deep into March? Now we're talking about football, and we really hope the Vermont Bucks can help carry us through the summer, along with the Lake Monsters, too, looking for a lot of success to continue this nice run that that Burlington is on. So, Irv, we appreciate the time. Best of luck tomorrow. We look forward to getting out to Gutterson tomorrow night to watch.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. Go Bucks.
Absolutely. Irv Bryson, appreciate the time. Vermont Bucks inaugural season kicks off tomorrow. The Bucks taking on Connecticut. Gutterson Fieldhouse is the spot for that game, 7:05. The spot for tonight, though, we are minutes away. Sam Hyman is waiting eagerly in Milwaukee. He's ready to get on the air. UVM taking on Purdue. The tip-off is 7:27. Sam's pregame goes from 7, directly at 7, to 7:27. You want to listen to that, and then you want to come here and join us. McGillicuddy's in Colchester. The place is packed. The beer is flowing. Guinness specials going on, thanks to our friends over at Baker Distributing. We got shots flowing of whatever. I'm off the air in what here? 1 minute exactly? Well, that you know where I'm going to be in that 1 minute. We've got T-shirts being given away. The Guinness girls are here. The UVM game is going to be on. Everyone is pumped. Cats are 9-point underdogs against Purdue. I've got Purdue winning by 6, but look, I've talked myself into it. UVM is going to be in this game down to the wire. Final 3 minutes of this game is going to be one possession game. I would not be shocked at all if UVM won it. I've got Purdue winning officially in my bracket, but I know UVM can hang with them. Anthony Lamb, Peyton Henson, they're your keys to the matchup. Can they stay out of foul trouble? Can they hit threes? Can they keep UVM even or ahead on the rebounding margin? UVM and Purdue coming up next. Sam Hyman live from Milwaukee. It's the Cats in the NCAA tournament. Join us at McGillicuddy's Colchester. And everybody, go Cats, go. We'll see you tomorrow.